When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
Msadi, this is your friend Veronica. I am in your brain now, and I am here to tell you, even though I'm not here, I will listen to your every thought and make embarrassing remarks about what your darkest secrets are in public. This is a threat, just in case you decide to forget about me. Now, I'm not here today because I am in Betaset, dealing with hard diplomatic negotiations. We're trying to decide the level of telepathic invasion in the World Wide Web. And we're also talking about best glittery necklaces, because we all wear them. Well, have a good episode, my tether. And remember, I will forever be in your thoughts. So don't think crap about me. Oh, was that weird? You're looking at me weird. You're looking at me because you can hear me? Oh, I gotta go. It's the police. It's the police. They're looking for me. I am not a diplomat. I am a runaway Betazed.
Hey, stop!
Oh no.
You there!
Oh no.
We're Betazed men!
We talk like this!
We're gonna get you! We're gonna get you and we're gonna tickle you! That's what we do, I'm better than.
I'm hiding behind a trash can.
Where'd she go? Where'd she go? She wouldn't hide behind a trash can. We never do that here.
No, she wouldn't.
Wait, she's telepathically telling us stuff still.
I messed up! Oh no! I shouldn't have
God, you can't help yourself, can you, better than woman? Posing as a diplomat. Get over here! Get ready to be tickled. That's right, me too hasn't reached here yet.
No, I can't stand the tickles. I will kick you in the face.
Oh!
Bye, guys. Have fun without me. I'll miss you.
Space. The final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no one has gone before.
I'm mostly a DJ.
So I guess like my thing is like I just feel the music in my heart.
Nice guys never scare me?
Well, you're alone in that, sir. All right. All right. Welcome to the Drive Time Radio Show. This is Treks in the City with your Drive Time Treks podcast recap show. We've got Alice Wetterlin in the studio.
What up?
It's just me alone. That's right. Nobody else showed up because I've sexually harassed everyone in my studio. I'm running the controls. I'm making the coffee. And I can do it all. Yeah, that's right. Drive Time. Treks in the City. Please, somebody stop me from ruining my life. All right, guys, it's Alice Wetterlin once again, alone. Not alone. I have a guest here who's feeling othered by my constant insistence that I'm alone. But Veronica again is away, and she's working on a show, and I'm happy for her. It's not complicating our friendship. It's not something that I'm willing to talk about it. If you guys want to talk about it, I can talk about it. Not a big deal. She's just working, and I'm not. No big deal.
But today in the studio, I'm very excited to have Travis McElroy.
Hi.
Oh, my God. The heir to the podcasting dynasty.
Yes. That is how I like to think of it.
Travis McElroy. The McElroy fortune.
Yeah. Oh, the grand the grand and or vast McElroy fortune.
Welcome. So can you tell me a little? This is about, we don't know each other, right?
This is correct.
Okay. I've just met you.
Yes. And this is crazy. This but here's my number.
Oh,
so
my.
So call me maybe.
Okay, I'm going to. Okay. It's not even a maybe.
Oh, that's nice.
I'm going to be like one of those automated Chinese things that you call it, pick up, and it's like, oh, hey.
I get so many of those. I have no idea how my number got on it, but I get constant like, I'd like to talk to you about health insurance.
Yeah.
And like, no.
And it's obviously a robot, but I'm like, if it was a person. So, Travis, you run three podcasts.
I run, depends on how you want to count them. Because I do My Brother, Me, The Adventure Zone, and Schmanners, and Trends Like These, all on Maximum Fun. And Adventure Zone is every 2 weeks, but the other three are every week. And then I do a Doctor Who rewatch podcast called Run, a Doctor Who fan cast, and that's every week. And then I do a show with my brothers called The McElroy Brothers Will Be in Trolls 2, where we're trying to get in the animated movie Trolls 2. And that
I auditioned for Trolls 2.
We're going to talk about this. Maybe off mic. We might have you on the show. And so that is sporadically. That's whenever we think of it. And then there's a show called Till Death Do Us Blart, where once a year we put out one episode a year. And every American Thanksgiving, we watch and review Paul Bart Mall Cop 2 for the rest of our lives. And then we've already designated who will take over for us when we die. And so the show will continue on in perpetuity forever. And then I do a show called Surprisingly Nice with my friend Hal Loveland, where we talk to celebrities and guests and people we're fans of. And we use it as a fundraiser for a charity of the guest's choice. Mm. And then I have a bunch of other shows. Well, I have one other show, I guess. I have a bunch of other shows that I used to do that are still running that, like, I founded and then I had to leave.
Wow.
And then I do a show with my wife called The Kind of Rewind, but we haven't put out an episode of that in, like, 4 months. So
I'm tired
mm-hmm.
with all that you do.
That's fair. I'm also tired. This is also in 3 days my sixth podcast guesting and like 12th scheduled event in 3 days.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I bet. And
did you come?
Did you come with a car or anything? That's what I need to know.
Did I drive here?
I rented a car
when I landed here.
What is my whole issue?
I don't know. But it's nice to meet you. I'm really enjoying this.
So have you listened to our show before or no?
Oh, well.
You don't have to have listened. You don't have to have listened.
No, I haven't.
That's okay. So we don't do guests on the show who haven't listened. So I'm going to ask you to go.
Okay, bye. Well, I've got to head to
thank
LAX.
Thank you so much for... that's how we find out. We wait till they're here and then we ask. You know, and people have suggested other kinds of ways of doing it.
No, but it's your way of doing it.
It is.
You know, or the highway.
Other podcasts will ask first. We have our own way of doing things. You know what I mean?
This is your creative process.
What I was supposed to ask you, because Veronica is my co-host. She's normally here. She sits here or here. And I just am with her. And she's not here today. and it sounds like I'm making her up, but I'm not.
Well.
She's adorable and wonderful, and she's
is she
working
here
on
now? Can you see her?
I sense that you're implying she's imaginary.
What? No,
and
I would never.
I hear you.
Uh huh.
And she's so wonderful that it's possible that maybe everybody imagined.
Yeah,
her
it's into, a collective like
she,
imagination.
Yeah. Like she wasn't born; she just accumulated, mm-hmm. you know, out
I
of
get that.
Imagination.
I understand
of people, but she is working on a show called Strange Angel on CBS All Access. Nope. I have a soundboard that I use improperly. And so she's been working so hard on that. And so she hasn't been here for a couple showsies. But what we do is we watch an episode of Star Trek from TNG with a guest. Not with a guest. You've already watched it. I'm so nervous. Why am I so nervous?
Listen, I'm just people. I'm podcast so royalty.
Wow.
But
it's a McElroy.
I'm just people. It's just, fine.
I feel like I gotta... Okay, I'm just gonna calm down, Alice. He's just a podcast royalty. No big deal. I'm looking forward to this for weeks.
I will tell you, I can make or break your show.
Oh,
I'm just saying. One word for me. That's not
true. My God,
true
Travis,
at all.
pre Please, Travis, please.
I will.
I've lost the use of L's. Oh, they're back.
I will make your show. Don't worry.
Thank you so
much. I don't know. I might break it on accident.
Oh, no.
Not on purpose.
It is fragile.
But, like, I might say something on the show and, like, everyone's like, oh, no, I hate those.
We have no recurring segments. So okay. People are very disloyal. Because they don't, there's nothing to come back for. They're like, what's even going to happen? Sometimes the guests don't watch the show.
I did watch it. Don't even worry. Yes.
Okay. I'm really glad you watched it.
This is the one with, like, you know, like the lightsabers and the Ewoks and stuff, right?
Oh. You've watched Star Wars.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Wait, which is this?
No.
Oh, no.
Also, it's funny to imagine that you just thought an entire movie was one episode of television.
Yeah. And I just kept screaming, where's
like,
Data?
You're like, it's so long. Have you ever watched Star Trek before?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Very much so. I grew up, my dad is a huge Star Trek fan. So, like, I grew up watching Next Generation. And I have watched, like, the first two or three seasons of Deep Space Nine. I'm kind of slowly working my way through it. Because of the age I am and when it aired, I have seen every episode of Star Trek Voyager. I watched Enterprise, and I've seen all the movies, and
I've seen all the movies,
including the new ones.
What do you think of those?
I think that they are a vastly different Star Trek, but I think that they may be so. Like, one of my favorite pop culture properties is Doctor Who.
Yes.
And on Run, we've been watching both the new, from Eccleston on, and we also have gone back and watched the classic series, and they are very different, but I can see how the reboot was perfect to get a new generation of people interested in it. And I can see where, you know, like, there's a 10-year-old who went and saw the Star Trek movies who was like, oh, this is great. Yeah. And I was like, oh, do you like that? What about this? And, oh, look at this. And who are these people? And, you know, like, get them interested. I think
as
it was a good in.
As they get more sophisticated.
Yeah, I don't think it was made for people who, like, grew up thinking, like, this is what Captain Kirk is and this is what Spock is. Because those people will go see it and be like, that's not Captain Kirk. That's
right.
Not Spock.
That's the problem. I mean, yeah, it's like not. To me, it's like it feels like Star Trek flavored.
Yeah.
You know?
Which, from my point of view, is brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing, is like, it's just not, it's not for people who are already, like, diehard fans of Star Trek. It's for people who have never had an interest in Star Trek before, and this might be their in.
It was Veronica's in.
Yeah.
That's what she first saw. And that's why we have this podcast, in a way. So it did help us. So.
There you go.
I have to stop yelling about it on the street.
I will say, the one that I have a friend who got his degree in, like, astrophysics, and, like, he liked he's a huge fan of Star Trek, and after the movies his whole thing was just like, but the ship would break apart, and, like, I was like you're right, and I think it's in the second movie where they, like, take off out of water, and he's
right.
That wouldn't work. He was just very, like, baffled by the science of it.
Which I think, as Star Trek fans, like, you've learned to suspend disbelief, but also they did enough work to make, like, the technobabble different from science, so that, like, they're like, well, that's a different kind of science. It's sciency, you know, adjacent, so it's not, like, based on real physics and then extrapolated so that the things that couldn't happen according to the laws of physics. So it's like, you know, dilithium, like, well, that, we don't know what that is.
Right.
You know, we don't know
But what they do really well, and I thought this watching this episode too, is what Star Trek has done really well is, it's completely made up fake science, but they kind of stick to it.
Yeah.
So it's like, this is how, you know, the antimatter interacts with the crystals.
Yes, yeah.
And then that's always how the antimatter interacts with the crystals.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's one part specifically I remember my friend being very frustrated by, and I am too, is that they talk about in the, I think it's the first Star Trek, the new one, where he's like, they say, like, if we enter the atmosphere, the ship is going to break apart. And then they're able to, like, kickstart the engines and get it going again. But you see it, like, rising out of clouds. And it's like, so it was in the atmosphere.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is it was in, because there are clouds not in space, but in the atmosphere. So if it's in a cloud, then you are just wrong.
But they do have space clouds.
Well, I got, there it is. It's the space
clouds.
One
of our favorite images that we've just conjured up out of nothing is Worf on the bridge, like, on the bridge, but on 10 forward, like looking out. It doesn't need to be Worf. Anybody looking out, and it's like singing and like that song, like some sad song is playing, and it's raining in space.
I know, did like that. That's really good. Yeah.
And
as like a tear rolls down Worf's cheek.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I forget what song we were like. What's that song?
Making my way downtown. Vanessa Carlton.
Vanessa Carlton. Alternately. Are we clear for
1,000 miles? I think it's called
1,000. And then we should change it to 100 miles for copyright purposes.
Okay,
so it's 100 miles. And it's Vanessa Barlton.
100 meters.
I would jog. We have to change every other word.
There we go. Perfect. You would jog.
You would jog.
Okay,
and then it's like, you would jog 6,000 meters. Okay.
And then we've changed the song entirely. It's perfect.
Yeah. So I don't know what I was about to say. And it seemed like I was really approaching it with purpose. I even wrote something down.
You picked up your pen and you went to your notes.
I remember what it was.
Okay.
Because I was going to ask you if you've seen Discovery.
I watched the first, like the pilot episode, right? And I was like, oh, this is good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I lost track of it because I have a baby and I haven't had time to watch anything at all.
Is your baby here?
No. No, she's back in Ohio. I'm very excited to go back and see her. But I do intend to get back into it because one of the things I discovered about Discovery, I watched the pilot and I thought, okay, this is good. And then thank you. There's a bit of a spoiler, but at the end of the pilot, mm-hmm. there's like almost a complete reset, like of mm-hmm. the cast and the mm-hmm. story. And I was like, wait, hold on.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's going on? But from all the sources I have heard and read, it's really, really good.
Yes.
So I am looking forward to watching it.
And spoiler alert, a lot of the same people you start to see. So it's not like they just disappear from the show.
It's just an interesting kind of take
it
on like all this is getting to know this character.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, that I really like the idea. Just kind of took me a second to get into.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have nothing against it. I haven't not watched it because I don't want to.
Yeah.
It's because I keep looking for opportunities.
How old is your baby?
She is now about 19 months.
Mm.
Yeah, so she's like running around and getting into trouble
and
hijinks.
Speaking in gobbledygook still, but
yeah, she's real close to talking.
Sentences of
like she understands things.
Yeah,
like she understands the words. Like mm-hmm. if I say like where is this, she'll like go get it mm-hmm. and bring it to me.
Yeah,
but if I look at her and she'll point to like you know her cup, and I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, what do you want? And she just like points harder, and I'm like, yeah but you have to say it. And she gives me this look like, you know what? Just give it to me.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna ask for it. What do you think this is?
Do you? What's your? What was your first word?
It's a really good question. I think it was probably some sort of food, cookie,
yes,
Cheerio, something like that, asking for something I wanted.
Mine was, too. A lot of people's first word is dada, because they can say
here's the
da.
Thing. Here's
that's the primordial word.
What I have learned is I think that there's a misconception about first word, because, mm-hmm. like, my baby at, like, 9 or 10 months or something said, like, daddy, right? But, like, she didn't know what she was saying. She was not, like, referring to me.
Right.
She was just making sounds and stringing sounds together in a way that she had heard. And it, I think
she... Because you prefer father.
I actually prefer Mr. McElroy.
Okay.
But she has since said the word more
mm-hmm.
and, like, meant it. Where, mm-hmm. like, she has eaten everything in front of her and said
more.
And it's like, okay, that so I consider more to be her first word because it is like a word she has said with intention.
Cute.
To, like, right?
I
and it's and
more.
Like, that's the thing. And so, like, now she knows where, like, candy and cookies are in the cabinets. And so she'll just walk over the cabinet and point to it and say, more.
Oh,
like,
that's awesome.
All right. Well, can't say no to that. Here's a cookie.
So great. My first word is juice.
Nice.
So we'll get into the episode now. This was a bit of a stinker. I don't know how
you
feel
didn't like
about
the episode?
It. No, I thought it was.
I really enjoyed the
you
episode.
You did?
Well,
tell me why.
Okay, one, my favorite character, maybe in all of Star Trek, but definitely Next Gen, is Data.
Mine too.
And I think a lot of people share that. And I think that this is a very interesting Data episode for me because it's, you didn't think so?
I did think so, but there's some things that he did that I find annoying, some characteristics that they give him that it feels like, so often Data is supposed to be the comedic relief, you yeah. know, and he's supposed to be doing things like the Chinese finger trap or whatever. And it's like, he's this amazing supercomputer, but he can't get out of the Chinese finger trap. That was in another episode. And like, then he does that thing with when he's trying to out strategize Riker later on, when he's like, he knew, but you didn't know. Okay, I'll find it.
Yes. That's the thing is, because we are still in second season, right? They are still put. So it's something that always. So one of the things I always think about when I think about the original series is like these like musical stingers as they went to commercial break of like Kirk yeah. kind of like rolling his eyes or like mm-hmm. Bones like glaring at Spock because mm-hmm. Spock has just said something so Vulcan.
Yeah.
And I think that they were trying to do that yes. a lot in the first two seasons.
In the first two seasons.
And, yeah. and it wasn't until later seasons where they were like, well, what if these characters were just like real people and not like caricatures or yes. cartoon characters? Like the number of times in this episode the Picard keeps referring to Riker and saying like he's the best, and I was like, that's such a weird way to say that. And like the number of times they give Riker these say, like smirky like
yeah
it's perfect, and it's like
it's great. Yeah, and so it is a perfect setup real. To undo all of those rules that they've made
right
in the later seasons, which is great because Riker becomes like this like real idiot sometimes.
Yeah.
And they start to lean into the other, like the Joey-esque parts of his character, which is great.
But I feel like what I like about Data in this episode is we, the viewer, are saying like, wow, he's behaving so human.
Yeah.
And like, that is interesting to me. But I will say watching it, I was like, with a couple little like writing tweaks. Mm-hmm. I think that moment, because what frustrated me is he never had a moment where someone said to him, you know, the feeling you're feeling right now, mm-hmm. that is what we feel all the time.
Yeah.
Like when I kept waiting.
Oh my God. Yeah, totally. Right.
When Picard went in, I was waiting for Picard to say like, hey, you know, that feeling of doubt you have where you might make a mistake. That is literally what I, the captain, live with all the time.
And that's not what happened.
It's not what
happened. So, okay, let's just preface for the, because the listeners often just don't watch the episodes and listen to us talk about them. So in this episode, you can help me summarize this. It's really helpful to me. They're going to do a war game because they're scared of the Borg.
Yes.
So the Borg freaked everybody out in the Federation. So they decided to like outsource the job of planning this like fake attack strategy.
Yeah, they brought that dude in. And here's the thing that one of my favorite notes that a director used to give at the Shakespeare company I worked at mm-hmm. was like, hang a lantern on it, where it's like, just make that point a little bit more important, you know? So mm-hmm. like there would be a line that someone was kind of like, you know, just running over, and he was like, hang a lantern on that. That's a very, really important point that mm-hmm. the audience has to get. And I feel like they didn't hang a lantern on the idea of like, this is the first like battle exercise the Federation has done.
Right.
Because before this, they were just exploration and now they need to prepare. Right. And it's like, oh, but also at the same time, I'm looking at going, wait, hold on. What about what's the name of the Kobayashi Maru? Like, isn't that a war exercise that like,
yes,
that like Kirk did long before the, anyways.
They all did them at the Academy too. Right. For some reason. And then Picard is talking about it. He's like, well, not a military organization. It's like, well, then why is the Academy so?
And why do you have photon torpedoes?
Yeah, why do you have photon torpedoes? And why are there like fighter jets? Like Wesley's doing like a fighter jet thing, and then that's when that later spoiler alert episode where he fucks up. But so they hire this gay villain to come aboard the ship and be like very, very, very fabulously neurotic.
And he does this tropey thing that I do not care for, where it's like, I don't care for this. He seems brash. Or he makes jokes, so he can't be a good captain. And it's like, who the fuck are you?
It's so crazy. So let's hear a little bit from this guy, because he is incredibly, like, so the whole hubbub aboard is that he's supposed to be like a part of this species that I forget the name of them, but they're very good at war and they're very good at strategizing everything. And all they do is plan wars, I guess. And then everybody is afraid to challenge them to war because they're the best. And then this is the guy.
I prefer brains over brawn as well. I think it's a waste of effort to test their combat skills. It's a minor province in the makeup of a starship captain.
Your objection is noted. Yeah. Let us hope that your distaste for the exercise will not affect your strategic abilities. Yeah.
So Mr. he's Kohlrami. Super cloying. Kohlrami. It's the Kohlrami. He's the Kohlrami salad, and he's extremely...
Hey, everybody. This is the B-Man, OBW, from the World Record Podcast, and I'm here to let you know that me and my co-host, the A-Train, a.k.a. Hershey Hellman, took over office hours live this week. We came into the studio. We made it our own. We wrecked the place. I stole one of Tim Heidecker's guitars. So check out Office Hours Live on your podcast app of your choice or at youtube.com/Office Hours Live this week and see what happens. Or go to worldrecordpodcast.com and you can watch the videos or join the Patreon, patreon.com/worldrecordpodcast. Enjoy the show!
It's showtime!
Faye and very, like, just bitchy to the max. Like, he's so catty. At a certain point, he walks away from somebody with his finger in the air, like,
And he literally, like, the thing he says the most in the whole episode is just like,
Yeah, I know.
And it is very coded as, like...
It's very coded, yeah. And so frustrating because at the beginning of the episode, everybody's already questioning his abilities because of the way he is.
Right.
And it's like, okay, fine. So in a normal episode of TNG where the quality I've come to expect from my fandom is that at the end they show that he is really good at it.
Right.
But the whole thing is that no, he's not. At the end, he is a dumbass and he underestimates Riker. He underestimates everybody and everything gets fucked up. So
that's what I don't understand is like, I was also expecting the same thing of like, well, at the end, the reason he was challenging them this way is what he was really looking at was this. And it's like,
it's like they set up a misdirect and then didn't go.
Yeah.
They just went direct. Like instead of like I was saying, like maybe it's like it feels like sometimes they hired a writing staff to write the first half of the episode and then completely switched. And like did like an exquisite corpse and had somebody write the second half of the episode.
Well, I think it's just first season, but you run into like the Roddenberry, you know, about like his ideas and stuff. For the first, where it was like
he doesn't want there to be any conflict.
Well, it was also like so he had written all of these Twilight Zone episodes that got like turned down, and so he recycled them for the first season of Star Trek.
Oh, it was Next Gen. Okay.
Yeah, so they just took these really weird like Twilight Zone episodes and made them. Star Trek episode, which is like a lot, I think, where like Q came from and stuff. Like, but so this very much feels like, okay, here is my, I can't stress enough, I did like this episode, but here was my big problem with it. The whole setup, right, is that Riker is being offloaded onto an 80-year-old starship, which already is like, that doesn't seem fair, to then compete in this simulated war game against the Enterprise.
Yes.
So Riker, the test is not for the Enterprise, but rather for Riker and the crew he takes of how well they can improvise to face a villain more powerful than them, like the Borg. And so the idea being they have 48 hours to fix up this derelict 80-year-old like Federation starship that's just floating in
around in space,
and then they are going to fight each other. But that's like the whole buildup of the episode, right? And then, spoiler alert, at the end, they do that for about 5 minutes.
Oh my god!
But they don't finish the fight
because a Ferengi ship shows up,
and I'm like, you've set up this whole duel. You gave me like literally Riker makes like 2 moves, Picard makes 1, and then you don't. Deliver the result of at the all. Thing and I'm like wait hold on who won like this the whole episode is about like competing and like what that means and like how to win and they don't it's deliver like they the thing they promised
they couldn't pit them against each other the two characters that are supposed to be aligned with each other
right
they couldn't figure out how to like make that okay so they just didn't
what it
so they just made them team up against the Ferengi.
What it reminds me of is in Fast and the Furious now everybody in Fast and the Furious has in their contracts that they don't lose fights like even like the comedic people and it started when the Rock I think it started with Vin Diesel and like the Rock came on and he added it. So there's, I think it's in Fast and the Furious 7, where The Rock and Vin Diesel are fighting, but they both have in their contracts that they can't lose fights. So they kind of both punch each other at the same time and like go flying backwards. And then people hold them back to stop the fight. So it's a tie. And it really feels like that, where they were writing like, well, Riker can't beat Picard. Like if he beats Picard, like Picard is supposed to be this like infallible badass captain. Mm-hmm. So he can't beat Picard. But then we're building up this whole time how Riker is the best and he's great. So it'd be weird if Picard like hands him his ass. And so it's like, okay, so, oh, we'll have another person show up and then they work together. Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, but like you've promised me mm-hmm. this competition the whole time. Mm-hmm. That's, and like the first 35 minutes yeah. of the 42 minute episode are build up to yeah. it. And then it's over in 30 seconds.
And then the weird B plot is about this game.
Stratagema.
That the Kohlrabi is very good at. And I couldn't figure out, what do you think the word stratagema is referring to?
It's like literally like they took the word strategy game and then just
oh
like.
Oh my God, strategy game.
It's just strategy game and they mix up the
strategy
letters.
Strategy game.
Yeah.
Because I was thinking, I'm going strategy. I can't.
It's a strategy game. I think it's just
gem?
Because it's like
or
if
is
you
it
took
like a Stratocaster.
It's no, like a I was weird doing portmanteau of strategy game.
I was doing a bit where I didn't understand it.
Oh, I see.
But
that was the bit. I get it. Okay. I will say, let me ask you this. For real, this is no bit. What do you think that game is?
Thank you. Because, okay, the game is supposed to be this. Like, I'm assuming it's like chess, like a strategy game yeah. where you're thinking 20 moves ahead. So then you go see it and it is fucking Pong.
Yeah, right.
It's Pong.
It's like three. So there's it's, like three screens well, circling each other.
Yeah. And then they put these like things on their fingers like
that
power
look like
gloves.
Cow milkers?
Yes, they do. They do. Like,
exactly looks like they're putting like them on their hand udders.
Their hands are the udders and the cow milkers go in their fingies. And then they sit across from each other. And then a holographic screen comes up, and then they wiggle their fingies.
They wiggle their fingies.
That's all it is.
And this dude is supposed to be like the best at it.
And so when he's winning, his face is all crumpled up, and he's like, he's literally doing the villain like finger move.
Okay, here's another misdirect that bothered me in this. So Riker challenges
yes.
him to stratagema, and Geordi's walking down the hall with him like, okay, so are you going to beat him? And he's like, no. Mm-hmm. And he's like, well, but it's going to be close, right? And he's like, no. Okay, yeah. Play that.
There's a, this is, I think, where he asks him to be on the crew, but I'm not sure.
Forward to.
Nope.
Yep, here
this
it is.
This is going to be exciting.
I also thought this was the thing that Geordi, he says his
so,
entire
you're gonna beat
experience.
Him, huh? Nope. Well, then it's going to be a close one.
Nope.
But you have got a chance. Ah. Are you even going to bother to show up?
Sure. Kohlrabi is the best ever at stratagema. Just to get to play him is a privilege.
So aside from your being privileged, is there anything else I can look forward to?
Nope.
So that's...
oh, besides from you being privileged.
That's Geordi's... that's LeVar Burton's entire experience on Star Trek.
But so,
aside from you being privileged, is there anything else I can look forward to?
Nope. So I watched that scene and I'm like, oh, okay. So what we know about Riker is he's already, I think, already met with Worf at this point mm-hmm. and said, like, how would you beat him?
Yeah.
Guile. And it's like, okay, so... like there's some ulterior motive that Riker has in this game. And maybe he's like, you know, he's hustling mm-hmm. Kohlrabi by like making him think like, oh, he wasn't good at this at all. Mm-hmm. He won't be a challenger. Nope.
Nope.
It really is just like he goes in there and gets beat real bad. And he's like, that's it. And it's like, why did, what? Huh? This is a weird setup.
Yeah. If it was setting up the thing, and then later on, Data challenges him because everybody's like, well, Data can beat him. We should see him get beat. Everybody hates this guy.
Yeah. Once again, I want someone to edit in a scene to this that's back at like the Federation headquarters. And like, thank God we got rid of that guy.
I know.
We sent him over to, oh, now we don't have to worry about, everybody hates this guy.
He's just a guy that is apparently the best in the whole universe at his job, ends up not being. And then it's like, everybody hates him. And then what's the
and
point?
He also offers nothing. Like,
he
that's
offers,
the thing is he, here's what I don't understand. If you're setting up that this guy is amazing at strategy, why isn't Picard facing off against him?
Him. Yeah.
Because
he's there
or set up like we're testing Riker to see if he's ready to like
yeah.
become a commander or something in case of war. Like, is he? Yeah. But instead, it's just like, no, it's just an exercise.
And he's there. He's just there. And the reason he's there is to peanut gallery the whole thing and tell people how bad they
just
are and everything.
Just drive the whole deal. And it's like, what's your deal,
and
dude?
I guess that could be a test. Like, how do you perform in a situation where the most annoying person you've ever met is like just there?
Is he there just to like grade them? Is he like the driver?
Yeah, I think he's
like
there
driver's ed instructor.
I think in universe explanation is that he's there to grade them for their performance. But it's horrible. And then so they're all like, let's have Data do stratagemma against him because we want him to get beat.
Specifically Pulaski.
Pulaski's very extra about it.
Oh my God. I don't know how you feel about this, but I very much prefer Crusher. I miss Crusher
love
so much.
Crusher. Thank you. Because everybody has come around to Pulaski that we've had on this show, but and Veronica too. And I really don't like her. I think she's got like the Paul F. Tompkins calls it the robot racism the problem where she's just like how can you understand? You're just a machine. She's like so mean to him for no reason. But I guess at this point they become friends.
But she also, I don't know if this is the writing or the actor or what, but Pulaski also seems to have this like, I don't care. Like,
yeah,
I'm only going to be here another half a season. Like that seems to be the way it's written. So like every interaction, I keep waiting for like a confessional scene where Pulaski looks at the camera and goes, I'm not here to make friends.
And scene. Yeah, I mean, she has a thing with, I guess they're also supposed to set up that she has a thing with Picard because she's like age appropriate or whatever. And like Crusher had a thing with Picard because they do these like weird, like teased romantic things. But that doesn't even come across to me. So I don't know.
Well, I think the problem is, one, they don't have chemistry. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. Pulaski and Picard, the mm-hmm. two actors, don't have mm-mm. chemistry. Mm-mm. But also like whoever wrote it, I think, doesn't understand how to write the playful banter, because what ends up coming across is, wow, these two are very similar, mm-hmm. right? So they seem like kind of old friend rivals who like maybe kind of flirted a long time ago, but like now there's nothing, as opposed to Bev and Picard, who I think like they are different enough that mm-hmm. when they banter, it's very interesting for mm-hmm. both of them, mm-hmm. as opposed to, I think, when Pulaski banters with Picard, Picard's like, I'm a captain now. Like, I have to do my job now, please. You can't talk like that to me in front of everybody now. I am the captain. We're not, you know, 22 anymore.
Exactly. So Pulaski eggs on Data to challenge Kohlrabi. Do you want some more water?
No, I'm good. Thank you. Sure. Okay. But this is also a Data thing, right?
Yeah.
That is a little frustrating for me, but I get why they do it, because so in every Star Trek series, there's always somebody who is like the person that you can explain things to. And like, maybe it's Spock, maybe it's Data, mm-hmm. maybe it's Seven of Nine. You know, there's always somebody who you go, how do I say it? Okay. Sometimes humans, right? And it's like, I'm going to give exposition to you, or you're our window in or something. But it's weird to me when someone has to explain to Data what competition is.
I know.
Where it's like, okay, but like he might not feel it himself, but the idea that he doesn't understand.
Yeah, the idea of what's the point of it at all.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's not androidism. That's just like, I don't know what.
It's always the first two seasons is like he just got turned on that day,
right?
And he's like, wait, humans compete in games? Like, yeah,
also,
Data.
They forget all the time that he has like the entire memories of this planet in his system, so he should know almost all things about what people do. So this is the scene after Riker loses, and I think they suggest.
And they have
That's
to do
it?
Awkward thing if they have their own utter
You only made 23 moves.
Congratulations.
Pulaski very attached to the outcome of this for some reason. So Pulaski like hates him the most, I think, is the idea here for some reason. And they don't have any history with each other. There's no reason for her to hate this person.
Commander Riker, there's your next challenge.
I very much don't understand. I always prefer, and I think they figured out this chemistry later.
I think it's
always more interesting when Geordi is explaining things to Data.
Yes.
Like, I think that's always better.
Yes.
The simulation will commence in 48 hours.
Also, I will say, I think I just like Crusher, Bev Crusher, which also sounds like a device you use to crush cans.
Yeah.
Bev Crusher's chemistry with Data is better.
Yes.
Like, that. I think that it takes a while for them to really figure out, like, how do we talk to Data so it doesn't sound condescending?
Yeah.
Like, how do we write an explanation to Data?
Right.
So that, like, people at home aren't like, yeah, like, he's not five.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I'm supposed to, because that's the thing, they keep talking about how he's infallible and he shouldn't lose. And it's like, okay, but he also doesn't understand the idea of competition.
Right, right.
So, like, how infallible is he?
So, because, well, the thing is, I think Data and Geordi, like, the reason that Geordi is so good at explaining things to Data is because, like, he doesn't treat Data like an android.
Right.
He expects human, like, responses from Data. Because Data wants to be human, so he's like, okay. It's almost like he's, like, ultra respectful. It's like, I identify as human. And he's like, all right, I'm going to treat you like a human.
Yeah, right.
So every time he doesn't understand something, he's like, Data, like, he gets short with him.
Yeah, you know? Right.
Which is great.
Well, and that's, if you look at the way Troy and Pulaski talk to Data, it's very condescending and very infantile.
Yes, yes.
And then Picard, like, busts in. He's like, hey, cut this out.
Yeah.
Do your job.
Yeah.
Stop worrying about it. And then gives him, like, one tiny thing at the end, like, you know, you can make a bunch of mistakes and still, you could do it right and still not win.
So Data is about to, I couldn't find the scene where she's trying to convince him to fight. Play Stratagema, but this is a scene where he eventually does play Stratagema against the Kohlrabi, and the ensuing extraness from
present context. Pulaski. What did she mean by bust him up?
In her own way, Dr. Pulaski was
always frustrating when you can't cuss in a show because it should say kick his ass.
Yeah.
As opposed to what?
Because, like, so no one's ever said bust him up in their entire life ever.
Right. And so when Data, that's true. And so when Data is questioning, like, what does that even mean? Because I've never heard it before. And she's like, well, it means, like, you know, don't let him win. Like, make sure that you take the quickest route to victory. And he's like, as opposed to what? And then she just condescendingly pats him on the shoulder, Data, and walks away. It's like, hey, maybe answer his question.
Yeah, like, maybe so that's like a learning opportunity.
So he plays him and he doesn't win and everybody loses their mind. The game takes 1 second.
Disposal for a rematch.
Thank you. But what would be the point?
Weird.
How can you lose? You're supposed to be infallible.
Jerk.
Obviously, hey. I am not.
That's such like...
Hey, another question. Pulaski, why do you care so much?
Like, but more than that, like, your friend, hypothetically, just lost and is embarrassed. And you're like, you lost? What's wrong with you? Yeah. Like, whoa. How about you treat him? Like, that's it. I think you nailed it with Geordi.
She's like the mom from I, Tonya.
Yeah. I think you nailed it with Geordi of, like, Geordi treats him like he has emotions.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas Pulaski's not worried about hurting his feelings.
Yeah.
And it's like,
exactly.
You racist. She is computer racist.
She is computer racist. You're not a person. You're a machine.
How could you lose? You're a machine.
She's like, it's like she's halfway to getting behind his little like skull cap thing and going in there and fucking.
I mean, she might as well have turned to him in this episode and said, I'm going to use you as a tool to embarrass this guy.
Yeah.
Like she doesn't think he wants to play. Like, that's the thing is this is not like this is going to help my friend Data grow. It really is just like I want to embarrass this guy. But rather than put a bucket full of water on top of his door, I'll use Data.
So fucked up. And so Data, because he lost to a humanoid, is confused because he is Data. And he's like, well, I should have won. So something's wrong with me. And so he takes himself out of commission and starts running all these diagnostics, not because... Like, because I guess he's like, and there is an episode of the original series that kind of precludes this, where it's like, if the computer can't do what the computer normally does in chess games, that means just there's some weird thing wrong. So he's trying to be like, well, maybe I'm, you know, rusty or something, and I have to figure it out. So he's just sitting in his quarters for days or something, like analyzing. And
come in, please.
All right, Data. Enough of this.
Doctor.
How long are you going to sit sulking like Achilles in his tent?
I'm conducting diagnostics.
You may be able to sell Troy that story, but not me. You're smarting because you were beaten. Well, it happens.
No, Doctor. This is not about ego. I'm concerned about giving the captain unsound advice.
I wish I had never maneuvered you into playing that game.
Yeah. I wish that too.
Yeah, dude.
My doctor. It is done, and perhaps just as well. This has indicated that I am damaged in some fashion. I must find the malfunction.
See, this is... Okay, this is the thing that's bonkers about this.
Yes.
Is that she treats him like a machine when she should treat him like a person, and then later treats him like a person when she should treat him like a machine.
Yes, exactly. It's ridiculous, because she's always trying to pimp Data into being whatever is convenient for her at the time.
And she, like, Data is making a perfectly rational point of, like, I am a computer against a human being. I messed up, so I'm trying to figure out why.
Yeah.
So that I don't mess up again. But everyone treats it like, oh, he's just embarrassed and feeling bad. It's like, okay, he is a machine.
It's
like,
so weird to extrapolate that.
Right.
After you treated him like a literal iPhone, and then later on you're like, all right, iPhone, why are you acting like so embarrassed? It's like, what? Why would you suddenly decide that he has emotions?
You're right.
No one's ever decided he has emotions ever in this show before. And so I just feel like it's so random. And then to me, what really upset me about this plot line was that I was hoping that they would find out something about the kohlrabi
through this
experience. Like, Data's always right.
Like, he must have cheated.
That's
what I thought it was going to be. It's like, kohlrabi cheats.
And like, the kohlrabi is cheating, and therefore we figured out why. But it isn't that. It's just that he is better at this game.
Right.
It's so stupid.
And,
doesn't make any sense.
Okay. So, in what I would say is the A plot.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you. So in the A plot, they have 48 hours to get this shitty old ship ready to face the Enterprise. And everybody boards the ship and they have 48 hours to do a bunch of shit to the ship to make sure that it's like as ready as it can possibly be. And then in that time, I guess they're not supposed to sleep. Like, which leads me to all these questions. Like, is Picard allowed to sleep in 48 hours? Like, is the regular Enterprise crew, and they just have to be like weirdly with, because this is bothers me in watching all content, how they don't, that people in these shows that we watch are like apparently fine to just not sleep. Like, if I don't have exactly 7.5 hours every night, like, I am insane.
Well,
but like, if you're in Hunger Games, apparently you only need 3 hours.
Here's the thing
in
about
a tree
this
branch.
This whole premise that's really skewed, right, is on, like, it's one of those things where the explanation of, well, the competition is these two shit. But then if you like analyze it for even a second, you're like, wait, what is
it completely because, falls like, apart.
Yeah. So Riker can pick whoever he wants and take 40 members. At one point, kohlrabi is like 40 to save 1,000. I'm like, wait, how many crew members? Okay. Because I think what it is supposed to replicate is the mismatch of if it was like a Federation starship versus a Borg cube, right? Because definitely you're outgunned by the Borg cube, but they never like explicitly say that.
Yeah.
Like, the point of this is to replicate. So in this situation, the Enterprise is the Borg, and the Hathaway is the Enterprise. But they don't say that. Instead, they just make it like, can they improvise? I'm like, yeah but like. The Enterprise is a fully functional like ship, and they can't warp. So like, you've gotten rid of the number one thing the Enterprise can do to the Borg, which is run away. And like, then he picks 40 people. They can't sleep. They don't have warp. They don't have weapons. They don't. And it's like, okay, so it's almost like this is incredibly skewed and not a good combat. Like, you have a holodeck.
Yeah, I know.
Why not just set up holodeck competitions against the Borg?
Truth is, most of us are brushing our teeth wrong, not long enough, and forget to change our brush on time. That's because most brands focus on selling flashy gimmicks rather than better brushing, but not quip. So what makes Quip so different?
For starters, Quip is an electronic toothbrush that's a fraction of the cost of bulky your brushes, while still packages the right amount of vibrations to help clean your tooth. Quip built-in timer helps you clean the dentist recommended 2 minutes, grinding, pulsing, ha! grinding pulses that remind you when to switch sides from one side of your mouth to the other neck.
Subscription plans are for your health, not convenience. They deliver butt shits on a dentist recommended schedule. Every three months, just $5, including every shipping. Worldwide.
Every 3 months.
Also comes with a month. Suctions right into your mirror and unsuction to use your mirror. Discover for hygienic travel whenever you travel and take your teeth.
Go to getquip.com/tracks. You'll get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. Not electronic. That's different. It's like a positronic versus
Quip
neurotronic.
Quip is positronic electronic toothbrush.
And that's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/tracks. Spelled getquip.com/tracks, which is T-R-E-K-S. And I've been using mine, and I gotta tell you what, not only are my teeth better looking, and my vanity is better looking, but I can rap better. I can rap better. We had no copy to read. This came off the top of my head. This is all improvised raps.
Getquip.com/tracks.
Happy birthday, Veronica.
Getquip.com/tracks.
End of ad.
Mouth.
End of ad.
Okay.
Mouth.
Mouth.
It's because this guy, the kohlrabi, is like on the payroll somehow, and he's got to justify his job.
I also just don't know, hey, Federation, why is that ship just floating there? Like,
just a ship floating in the middle of space.
What happened to lead up to, was it like attacked?
Every time, other times when they find a ship just floating, they're like, whoa, a mystery.
Yeah, and it's like been shot at and destroyed. And this is just like everyone on the Hathaway at the same point, like, I don't want to be here anymore. Just left. But I'm taking the TV with me or something.
And it's just this abandoned ship, which leads me to think that, like, is space just littered with old Federation ships?
Like, the Federation just keeps track of where they left it, for sure, but they don't do anything with it? Like, that's incredibly wasteful.
And there's dilithium still in the ship that they can use. I mean, it must be that they use these things specifically for war games, which is weird because ever done it before.
Especially when at the end of the episode,
they're,
like, towing the Hathaway to a Federation like station.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, wait, hold on. There's a Federation station close enough that you can tow an impulse, but still you just left the Hathaway floating in the middle of space? Why hasn't anyone brought the Hathaway to this station?
That maybe they had the Hathaway on board the station and they put it there.
Okay. Here's another problem with this war game that bugged the shit out of me. They start about 20 feet away from each other. And they're just like sitting there and like, and go.
I was like, I know.
Wait, what? Why would that
be? The beginning of the war game is so funny. I have to watch it. It's so insane.
Oh, he's doing the Polby move or whatever.
Yeah, it's crazy. All right, here it is.
They're so close to each other. They just start throwing rocks at each other.
The hunt begins, number one.
We're ready. Just remember, Enterprise, Captain Riker's never lost.
And everyone's...
everyone's
I love Will Wheaton in that moment. Will Wheaton in that moment. Captain Riker's never lost. And Will Wheaton, like, takes to the camera. It's great.
He's so excited. Yeah, you're right. I'm looking at a picture.
Right, they're like, facing each other. They could wave at each other.
They could see each other through the windows.
Okay, watch Will Wheaton. I say this with all the love of my heart. Will is my friend.
We're ready. Just remember, Enterprise, Captain Riker's never lost.
He mugs me so hard.
Will, if you're listening, you're great.
Please come on this show.
Set course 223, Mark 357.
We're not friends with him.
Full impulse power.
Many of our guests are.
Initiate coma maneuver.
Coma maneuver.
Kuma maneuver.
Why would they start out with such a recognizable ploy?
He's teasing. He wants us to reveal our tactics on his
foreplay.
Mr. Worf.
Counter with the Tilupian maneuver on instrument sighting.
Agreed. Three-quarter impulse, one, full on my command.
Like, it's enabled like, maximum shield. What is that? What are you guys talking about? Yeah. Am I supposed to know this?
Aye, sir. Okay,
set course. 317.
Mark, 7-3. Present minimal aspect.
All right. Do the poopy maneuver.
Ready, walk one. Poopy maneuver. Spread on simulated
poopy. Do that one flood. Where we kind of seem like we're going to hit him, but then Captain, we swerve at the last second. What's that
fast from astern. What the?
He came out of nowhere, sir.
Bring us about, Ensign. Maximum shields. Full weapon systems.
Disengage modified.
Lock on. Over to hailing frequency.
I can't, sir. There's nothing there.
See, this is what he's confused me. Now. Right there, that whole army the whole time has been like, Riker's a dummy.
Yeah.
It's then just like, laughing.
Oh, loves Riker.
Yeah.
Re-engage, modified B.
He's quite good.
He's the best.
Computer reports simulated damage
well,
to several aft decks, sir.
He's not.
Time, he's like, not.
Picard
days.
Is better
is
than him.
Best.
Like, this yeah. is what I don't get.
Mr. Worf must have overridden the sensor codes, played some holographic games, Mr. Data.
How do you know
it
was Worf? That also doesn't make any sense. I guess because he's in charge of,
attack
like...
Attack posture. Circumvental attitude. Prepare beams. Or photon mode.
They're also, the more I watch this show, I'm reminded of, like, the actors will often talk about how much they didn't like the costumes, uh-huh, the way that
yeah.
they fit.
Yeah.
So you can watch Picard constantly pulling down his shirt.
Yeah, and it, after us. Wesley, he's such a good Jordan, actor that he incorporates it into his character.
No, yeah, but it is something that they do constantly because it was, like, every time they would sit down, it would, like, light up their backs or something. And so they had to, like, keep pulling it down.
Captain. Sensors picking up a Ferengi warship closing at warp 5.
Okay, see,
yeah.
Did
okay.
you input that new code?
Now, the Ferengi warship is real,
yes.
right? And here's the thing about this. It's what, okay, so in D&D, I'm pulling a lot of weird pop culture nerd stuff,
yeah.
but in D&D, you know, in the fights, technically, according to the rule book, every mm-hmm. round is like 6 seconds, right? So uh-huh. like I make a move, you make a move, you make a move, you make a move, right? And that can take like 20 minutes to
oh,
all work
okay.
out.
Mm-hmm.
But in the game time, it's 6 seconds.
Okay.
And then I watch this and I'm like, okay, so in such a brief amount of time,
mm-hmm.
he does the Comey maneuver and he does
the cool
he does the James Comey maneuver and he does the Dave Coulier yeah. maneuver and like they're doing these things and then he fakes the ship and then the Ferengi show and it's like it's been 10 seconds
yeah
it has been 10 seconds
I know
and this is 38 minutes into the episode
right
and it's like wait hold on it kind of feels like this should have been the whole episode.
The whole episode, right.
Is like the whole episode is Riker's already on board the thing. They're almost ready, but they're right. trying to figure out some last minute stuff.
Instead of having the episode be like, we have these things where we have all these minutes to fill. So we get moments that are absolutely pointless and weird where Worf is in his
am I disturbing you?
Playing with popsicle sticks?
He's putting together a model ship.
With popsicle sticks.
But he's so frustrated by it and hates it. So I can't tell in this moment,
he breaks it because the door chime sounds.
Enter!
And then Riker comes in.
I can't tell if it's supposed to be that he's embarrassed that Riker has found him putting together a model, or if he's, like, putting together the model because he's trying to, like, work
you?
On his patience, or... And he hates it, or does he actually love it, or what? Because then he just, like, sweeps it
there
into a drawer.
There had to have been some explanation for this. Or, like, this is, like, a Worf character thing that they... And then they just didn't have enough time, I guess, to, like, put it fully in. But then they also kept it. So it just looks like he's embarrassed to be playing with popsicle sticks. But also... Why would, if you're embarrassed to be playing with popsicle sticks, he lets Riker walk all the way into
yeah,
the
right?
room.
Yeah, right. Why not sweep it off?
It.
Like, Riker's like, hold on.
Yeah. He just
yes?
lets him see it. And then he's like, and if you're Riker and you're standing next to Worf and you're like, hey, am I disturbing you? And you watch him take his craft
like,
project.
Hey, no, wait, buddy.
Yeah.
Hey, don't do that. That
you
was
would,
good.
Like, let him.
You're doing
hey,
a good
man,
job.
Can I just see what you were working
hey,
on there?
Hey, whoa, 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 whoa.
Was
whoa.
That like a boat?
Worf. What are you making?
Nothing.
Worf.
I am making nothing.
Worf.
What?
What are you making?
A boat.
It's a good boat.
No, it's not.
No, yes, it is. You're doing a good job.
I did another one. You want to see it?
Yeah.
All right.
Then we'll go get ice cream.
It's blue.
Blue. That's so good.
I like blue.
Yeah.
Blue is an honorable color.
Blue is an honorable color.
What kind of ice cream?
Whatever you want. Blood. Blood ice cream.
Blood slime.
Yes, we can have blood slime ice cream at 10 forward.
So I wanted to ask you, before we
or I don't know what time it is, but we have to get this done because the one thing I love about this episode is that they get to pick their fantasy crew.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, like, what I would pick, obviously, when Riker was assembling his crew. So I think we should do that now.
Well, I think the biggest mistake that Riker makes is not taking Troy.
Yes.
Because, like, strategy is great, but, like, psychology, I think, is much more powerful in this circumstance. And, like, it's also weird to me that, like, Picard isn't like, okay, Troy, like, tell me everything you know about Riker. Like,
right, right.
Here's the thing across the board, I will play your game, I promise. But you have made me realize that I think
it's really stratagema.
One of the problems of this episode is none of them seem to be taking it seriously, but they want me to.
Oh my God.
Mind fucking blown. I really did think that was a really good point.
But it's like,
you just waited for me to finish.
Uh-huh, go on. But it's like, like the fact that Picard is just like, yeah, all right, we'll be ready when you're ready.
Yes.
And it's like, okay, why aren't you like calling a war council like you would?
And then we
came upon a ship and.
And then why? Yeah, so I'm not invested.
Right.
You clearly aren't.
Right. And so like, it's weird that they don't treat it.
Yeah.
So like if they came upon the Borg and the Borg were like, you have 10 minutes or you're going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
Like Picard does when the Ferengi shows up.
Yeah.
He calls people into like the war room and they're like sitting down to figure it out.
Right.
And this is just like, okay, well, we got 48 hours.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, why aren't you strategizing about Riker and talking to people like this is some like foreign, you know, enemy that you don't know. And everybody's being so casual and smirky and funny
and they're
about
like just
it.
Excited.
Right.
They're just pumped to do this. And like, that's not how
and
you
I'm
would
watching
be.
It like, okay, cool.
What's
well,
the point? Yeah.
I can't wait to see what Riker does. But the other problem they do, and this is, I think, a problem with writing, is the whole thing is supposed to be, well, you'll never believe what tricks Riker pulls.
Right.
But they tell us as they figure them out, where Worf is like, I can fake it so it looks like there's a ship, but there's not really going to be a ship.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay. And then they do that.
Then
and we're
do
like,
that.
Okay.
So
that was that thing they did
tell
when us.
The Ferengi shows up, you know, you're watching it and going, oh, maybe that's the thing. Maybe the Ferengi is something the Kohlrabi maybe the Kohlrabi did the same thing Worf did and he's creating like a Ferengi. He hired them or something like that. Like that would be believable.
And the whole thing is about it's actually the strategy is about how do you work together?
Yeah.
And like, that's the actual test.
Sure.
That nope.
Any of that would have been fine. Instead, it's just, hey, that's a pretty huge coincidence.
Yeah, right.
That during this whole episode, they've been plotting for how many hours? And then the 10 seconds, that's when the Ferengi, that implies that the Ferengi have been watching them this entire time and then only entered now. Because they're like, oh, you're firing at them.
Yeah.
What?
Hey, what's up? So my dream team.
Okay.
And I think this isn't far off from what Riker does. Mm-hmm. So for sure,
okay,
Geordi.
Okay, so we're gonna fight. So you can take Geordi because you took Geordi.
Uh-huh. Oh, this is what we're fighting? Geordi. Okay.
Well, I think, right, because it's fantasy. Is that how you do fantasy?
Yes. Because if I'm on the Hathaway, right, and nothing is working, you take your best.
Oh, you're on the Hathaway.
Yeah, I will take the Hathaway.
Well, I'll take the Enterprise.
Okay, great.
Okay, so you've taken Geordi on the Hathaway, and then I'm going to be on the, and you're you or you're Riker?
Oh, I don't know if I can get the head of Riker. No, sure. Okay, give me a second. I'm kind of weird. I sit in chairs weird. Okay. Okay, got it. All right, I'm there.
Okay, you're Riker. So I'm Picard.
I'm too tall, and I smirk at everything, and my voice always sounds like I'm doing a voice. Okay. That is the thing. Jonathan Frakes is doing, like, actor voice so
all
hard.
All the time.
Geordi, let me ask you a question. It sounds like he's narrating an audiobook all the time.
Well, we interviewed him, and he also does sound like that.
Oh, really?
Don't make promises you can't keep.
He just talks like that.
I'm doing an interview with a couple of comedians.
He only talks like that.
It sounds like
you guys want to talk about Star Trek.
Where was he born? Because it sounds like he has worked.
Actor Planet.
Yeah, it works like he had like a super strong, like when I was born in West Virginia and my accent until I was like 14 sounded like, hey, everybody, how's it going? And like, that was how I sounded. I have a home video of me at like seven and that's exactly how I sound. And it sounds like Jonathan Frakes was born with that accent.
Yeah.
And then he has worked really hard to become Jonathan Frakes.
What is the definition of an optimist? A trombone player with a beeper.
There you go.
Also, it's, I like that because we didn't edit that clip, I don't think at all, right, Brett? So it's just the timing in that is that he jumps from, there's no time to say like what.
Yeah.
He just jumps right to it.
So I'm taking Geordi to fix up all the shit.
So you're taking Geordi and you were Riker and I'm Picard and I'm taking, I'm taking Wes.
Oh, okay.
Right away. Because when Kohlrabi makes fun of Wes, it's like, why would you take a Oh, you mean the guy who saved you guys literally every time he's on the ship.
Oh, do you mean like the wunderkind that like...
Who somebody came on board season one, a weird alien that's like in time travels to tell you that he is a special, special talent that you cannot ignore and needs extra special attention because he's like the best mind of his generation.
Yeah.
That guy?
You mean that guy?
That you're always telling to shut up.
Do you mean that one?
So I would take Wes immediately. Ends up saving them.
Yeah. And I would take Worf, right? Because it is a battle exercise and like you've got your tactical officer.
Big mistake. But the most ineffectual tactical officer.
He can shoot pretty good.
He's horribly written.
This is true.
They don't give him any skill. He's just always shooting first.
Well, this is a mistake that they make with Worf and I think the whole series is they build up this idea of like he's a Klingon amongst humans, but then they write him like a human.
Yeah.
But that's kind of embarrassed about his rage issues.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, let Worf be Worf. You know what I mean? Like he brought this Klingon on, but then you don't listen to any of his advice.
He's constantly talking about his Klingon heritage and like what Klingons do all the time as though everybody doesn't know he's Klingon and that like he's obsessed with it. It's like he's pretending to be Klingon or something, or like he's secretly human and he's like doing too much to tell everybody that he's Klingon. Yeah, well, you know, I'm Klingon.
Is Worf half human? Or no, he's full Klingon.
No, he was raised by humans.
B'Elanna is half human in Voyager. That's right. But like, it does frustrate me that every time Worf ever gives advice, they're like, "That's not how we do it on this ship."
Right?
Boy. Like, that's not how humans do it. It's like, all right, why'd you give him that job? Why'd you let him your tackle? Don't listen to him. But I would take Worf. And then I would take Worf and I would be a way better manager for him than Picard is. And I'd be like, hey, I want you to know, I want to hear your ideas. I think your ideas
well, that
are good,
is Worf. Kind of what Frakes does.
Yeah.
Okay, so I will take...
I like you called him Frakes. Captain Frakes.
Captain
Not Riker. Frakes.
So, fuck. I guess I'm going to take... I'm just going to take Data before you do.
Okay, that's fair. Because my next move, and maybe this is cheating, but I'm going to take 38 unnamed, 38 unnamed engineering people. Like, I'm just going to clear out engineering and just take everyone in engineering.
The one Asian guy.
I don't need to know their names. I've got a ship that needs fixed. I got no
warp.
They
tend to clump in the background a lot.
I'm just going
to
take them.
If there's ever a shot.
The one woman in the middle of the conversation with the Worf and where they're talking about the thing and she's like, and they wouldn't know. And I'm like, wait, who is that? It's like just new person with three lines who just got their sound card.
It really feels like... It really feels like she wasn't planned to be in this scene at all. She's just all of a sudden, she's like...
It is like an extra who like leaned into the scene and they're like,
yeah, and she's
okay,
like, I could do the line if nobody else is going to do the line.
Do we have a clean take without the extra?
I don't think we have a line there, but you could, I guess, write one another shot of them 20 feet away.
So close.
With my knowledge of the
Enterprise's she's just in the background now looking at the speed.
We may be able to convince the sensors that an enemy ship is approaching.
Brett, look.
Their instruments would lie to them.
About instruments?
If you can pull that off, idea. Mr. Worf, you might give us the edge we're looking for.
Uh-huh.
But what about the view screen?
If I am successful, the computer will project a false image of the enemy ship on the main view screen.
So unless someone runs to a window and looks out,
they're going to fall for it.
Okay.
They're acting like they've never talked to her before.
Yeah. And also,
right.
They both do this, like, turn, like, what? Okay. Who are you? All right. Cool.
So she's on your squad.
Yeah.
All right. That leaves me to take Troy.
Ah, damn it. I forgot I said I'd take Troy.
Yes. Oh my god! That's why I was worried, because I was like, oh fuck! Like if I take Data, he'll take Troy. But then you took 38 people.
38 engineering people.
So you have Riker. You're Riker. You have Geordi Worf. 38 people, and then you can take one more person.
I would take Cole Rami.
You'll take Cole Rami?
Yeah, he's never going to see it coming. No, I would take Picard.
I'm Picard.
I know, but you're coming with me. What? That's the twist, Guile.
Guile.
I'm taking you.
Is this Worf's idea?
Yeah.
Fuck.
So now you're on my ship.
So now, but I still have, but my team is still Wes, Data, and Troy.
But I go back to your
Troy.
Team, but now I teleport. I think that's what they call it. I teleport over to the Enterprise, and now the Enterprise
using
is mine.
A teleport.
Yeah, it's
is that
mine.
Because we can't sense it?
Yeah. And then I travel in time.
Wait, I have one person
before
still that
you
I,
were born. What?
I have one person that okay. I can, and I'm picking O'Brien.
Is O'Brien on the ship at this point? Yes. He's not in this episode.
Okay. No, he's not, but he
but
is on the ship.
But we do get that one guy who's an ensign who I think.
It's like the redhead?
Yeah, I know him from, he's on a whole bunch of 24. Yeah, and he's really good
on
24.
He's like an early version of, who's that nervous guy that they have in engineering?
Who is that dude? Because he's also a big part of Voyager.
I want to say Landry, but that's the name of...
It's Lando. I think that's it. No, I can't remember.
That's the name of the guy from Friday Night Lights.
I can't remember. I'm really frustrated myself.
I know, that's really... can we have somebody call in? What's the number?
Somebody call in. Tell me what that guy's
name
is.
Okay, if you know the name of that guy, because we're not going to look it up, even though it would take 2 seconds, and Brett's not either. Don't touch
Brett.
The keyboard, Brett.
Are you about to write it down? Do you know
He's
what it is?
He's about...
Okay.
To Google something, I can tell. I can fucking sense it. Hashtag, hashtag blessed. That's right. Who's that guy? Tell us who it is. And you hashtag blessed. You hashtag blessed. So that we know what you're talking about. Okay. Brett just gave me a signal that says 5 minutes, which is not what I thought he was going to do. I thought he was going to look up the name of the guy, but he didn't.
I can't. I'm really mad at myself that I can't remember that guy's name.
Do you want?
No.
No?
No.
Okay.
I want to remember it.
All right.
All on my own. All my ownsies.
He was Geordi's friend. He believed in ghosts, sort of, I think.
Well, and he also, in the end, was like fascinated by Voyager and the idea. In Voyager, he's fascinated by Voyager, and he has created a, there's a whole episode where he's created like a holodeck recreation of Voyager so he can be on Voyager with them. And he's like, do it. And yes, it's very interesting.
So, but he's in Voyager during that.
No,
this is from.
This is just like a special episode. And then he, I think.
Of TNG?
No, of Voyager. And I think this is a big spoiler, I think, for Voyager. I think that he is the one that helps Voyager get home at the end of the series. And he's like a huge hero.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I'm interested in watching Voyager now.
Many people say that Voyager is not good.
Yeah.
The mistake that Voyager does make is in the very beginning, the first like 5 episodes, there's a huge promise made to the audience of like, it's going to be stressful because these two groups have to get along and work together to get back. And it's very quickly like, and everything's great.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, but you promised me. But I think that there are some really standout characters in Voyager and some really standout episodes. Overall, it is, as Star Trek goes, a fairly weak series. But there are some really great performances in it. Robert Picardo is amazing in it. He plays the holographic doctor.
Robert Picardo.
Picardo. And he's really good. He plays the holographic doctor. And Seven of Nine is really great. And Janeway is one of my favorite captains.
Mulgrew. She's great.
The problem is the problem that they made in writing Kate Mulgrew and writing Janeway is that they were like, okay, and she's going to be our first like female lead Star Trek captain. Mm-hmm. But we're going to try to write her like a man because she's trying to fit in a man's world. And so like there's so many storylines about the conflict between her trying to be a captain but also a woman. And it's like
they have her getting her period.
You never did that with there's a whole episode where she falls in love with this guy in the holodeck that's like a hog, and it's like,
oh yeah,
and it's like the conflict of like, well, of course as a woman she wants to settle down with this guy, but as captain she can't leave the ship.
Oh,
and it's
my
like
God.
You never have that shit with Picard or Kirk or whatever. But with her, it's like the number. I'm pretty sure she says the phrase like as a woman a bajillion times.
Right. And that doesn't feel believable at all because it's like that is not something you'd be thinking about on a daily basis, really. Yeah. It would be like maybe a deeper concern that you've like, you've chosen this one path, like anybody would have like deeper concerns about like what they've chosen in life and do they have regrets. But you wouldn't like constantly be hitting up against it every time.
Especially
you're...
not in like the year 2200 yeah. or whatever, where you're like, yeah, we're past the point of like, yeah, a man can pursue whatever career he wants, but a woman is giving out family and it's like,
yeah.
It's really weird.
Well, that's why I have a problem with watching the original series, because the original series is so patriarchal and so bros in space. And it's just like a lot of the stuff is like, they'll be like, well, we have all these stacks of papers that we have to deal with. And it's like, well, why? Because you have computers right there. And it's the same thing with social dynamics.
Right.
Like women walk in and they're like, get over here, bitch. And it's like, why?
Well, that's the thing.
Why are they even on the ship?
If you look at the like the crew makeup, it is always like four like masculine characters to one female. Like you never see a ship two where different. It's like, yeah, you know, there's never a ship where it's like 18 women characters on the bridge and like one guy.
Except that episode with Riker when he goes, like, there's like that all female society in season one, maybe season two.
But it's not like a Federation ship. It's not just like, well, it's luck of the draw. It looks like somebody was like assigning people, like, well, we're going to get some women in there.
It takes them a really long time to get to the point where it's not a big deal. And they do it a couple times, I feel like, in TNG with I'm gesturing to my nose with for the Bajoran.
Yes.
What's her name? I forget.
Well, the Bajoran on Deep Space Nine? Is that who you mean?
No, the Bajoran character on TNG. I'm going to ask Siri. Siri, who's the Bajoran character on The Next Generation?
Checking. Okay. I found this on the web for who's the pitcher and character on The Next Generation.
No, that's not what I
asked. No. Siri.
She doesn't know the word Bajoran, and that's fine, and that is on me.
What if she just came back and like, I don't know, nerd?
She is this lady, Ro Laren.
Oh, okay.
So I feel like with Ensign Ro, they start to have like a just... She's not... Her main thing isn't being female. Her main thing is being Bajoran. So then they start to kind of position her in as just like a regular officer. And so she has scenes, I feel like, sometimes with like Crusher or, you know, that aren't... That do pass the Bechdel test. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Well, that... And then I will say that I think in Deep Space Nine, Nana Visitor, who... Now I can't remember. Is it Nana? Whatever. Mm. But the major there, she is like... just a character that, you know, like 9 out of 10 times, not all the time, but most of the time it's like, okay, that character could have been cast by any gender person playing it. And it just ended up being
also,
her.
I make an argument for Luxana Troi, who is such a character and has so many other qualities besides being female, even though a lot of her qualities are because she's female, but they're just like so extra that she is able to do a lot of things and be a lot.
She has
wear
a couple
of hats.
Really good episodes on Deep Space Nine. Yeah, she has one with with Odo that's like one of my where they're like trapped in an elevator or something, I think, and it's really
she's
good.
She's so great. Yeah. I want her to be on Discovery, so she can have been in all of them.
But so Janeway, I think I love the performance of Kate Mulgrew as Janeway.
Cool.
I think like. The writing did her a huge disservice.
Yeah.
Because it was like, what? I don't know what the makeup was as far as gender and the writers go, but it did look like watching a whole bunch of dudes try to figure out what's a woman's life like? What do you think women have to deal with? Probably like being all emotional and stuff. And like, there's a whole bunch of stuff like where she has to explain to like Chakotay, like, okay, but sometimes I'm not sure of my emotions. Am I leading or am I worried? And then, yes, of course, I'm afraid for my... And it's like, this would... I wish I could go back in time and be in the writer's room like, okay, would just write a speech like you would write it for Picard. And then just let Kate Mulgrew say it.
So many times when I started acting, I'd be like... Like, I'd have these lines and I'd be like, what? Like... They like, we don't know how to write for women. It's just like, just write for a guy.
Just write the same and let
and
me read it.
At the end of the process, change the name.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do. And it works every time. It doesn't even need to end up being a lesbian.
Well, see, and that's the thing like with Data too, that I think is a certain amount of like, well, how do we write for a robot? It's like, Just write
the character.
Let people talk to him like he's a human, and then go back and remove all the contractions. And you've got it. There you go.
And that's because that's what they were already doing anyway.
Yeah.
But it was just like really inconsistent. Like sometimes he doesn't know what games are.
Well, that's the thing is like, it's like they said, what if we wrote Spock, but he doesn't understand when he's being patronized? It's like, I keep waiting for Data to be like, I know what competition is. I'm just saying like, why the fuck do you care? Like, why is that important to you? Get over it. That's what I want to see is like him just trying to blast him like, no, I get that. How? I'm a supercomputer.
Yeah.
Yes, I understand the idea of competing.
I so badly. I love that, though. They nail it with Spock that because Bones is always angry at Spock just because. And I hate Bones. And they nail Bones being like so angry. And like every time Spock says anything, Bones is so ready to be like, well,
racist.
You're a fucker.
Yeah, because he's xenophobic.
Yes, he's xenophobic. And then Spock is always like, you know, Bones will be like, I can't believe you're thinking about that at a time like this. And he's like, oh, hi, Bones. Maybe you could help me with something. Like he has no reaction to it, which is like one of those, it like
he's
completely
trolling him so hard.
Undermines his bullshit. Yeah. Like I saw Tig Notaro perform one time and somebody heckled her from the audience and was like, ah, you know, and she just completely ignored it. Which she doesn't always do that, but like in the, she was just doing her joke and it made the guy so small to be like, you're not here, you know, like your racism isn't here right now is so amazing.
Well, and to jump back to this episode a little bit, but I think that this is also early Troy, where they very much have Troy as like this paper doll kind of character that's very patronizing and just there to be, you know, the one who cares about emotions and stuff.
Right, right.
Where later they make her so much more interesting as far as like dealing.
Right.
That she almost becomes like their diplomat, you know, in interacting with other people. And it's like, that's so much more interesting than simply having a character that's like, well, sometimes people get angry and they compete. And it's just like, okay. Yeah no, I get that. Versus like her sitting on the bridge and saying when they turn off, be like, okay, this person definitely doesn't trust us. I'm like, this is not
cool.
They
do that a bunch in season two, but there's so many points at which people ignore it.
Yeah.
Like she's like, they're lying. Like she's actually, there's an episode recently where she comes and stands in front of everybody in front of the view screen and is like, hey, they're lying to us. You got to stop what you're doing. And they're like, we'll figure it out.
Okay, we've got it.
It's like, and then Data goes, hey, just to... Yeah, Troy is psychic, so she sometimes knows things that you don't. Like,
You listen to her?
Yeah, it's so crazy.
Woke Data, you know?
It's nice. So crazy. Well, I know we have to go, so I'm going to thank you for coming on this show. Do you have anything you'd like to plug for us, or things you've been listening to, or watching, or seeing, or peering at?
So I'll plug my stuff first, and you can find like all my shows and stuff at McElroyShows.com, McElroyShows.com. And I do a rewatch show too, like I said, of Doctor Who called Run, a Doctor Who fan cast, and that's available.
You're a Whovian.
I am, really, a lot. And we look at both classic and the new stuff. I do that with my friend Tybee, and it's really fun. But yeah, all my shows. And then I will say lately what I've been listening to is audiobooks by Sarah Vowell.
Okay,
I just listened to one. There's one that's really, really fun called Assassination Vacation. And it's her like touring around and visiting all these historical locations.
Sick.
Having to do anything with like the assassination of like McKinley and Lincoln and not JFK. The other one that was like in the first 20 presidents, you know, but I can't remember. It's McKinley. Is it Grover Cleveland?
Grover.
I don't know. But anyways, so it's like really interesting because she visits like even the most minute, like this person who knew this person lived here kind of thing. And what it really highlights is a lot of like the weird kind of intertwining of history.
Yeah.
And like you come to find out like Robert Todd Lincoln was at McKinley's assassination. And it's like this weird kind of like. Yeah, a lot of history kind of weaves back in. And, yeah. And like there's one talking about how Teddy Roosevelt was vice president and became president because of an assassination, which I never think about.
Right.
And it's like there's a whole big section about talking about how he like was mountain climbing at the time.
What?
And like got the call that the president had been shot and him like rushing back to like become president. Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
Bananas.
Yeah.
She's amazing. She does some incredible work. I really love her. She's so enthusiastic and it's infectious.
It's also really fun because her audiobooks, she gets like
actors to read the quotes.
What? So that's like awesome. In, I love it.
Is it Assassinate?
She hasn't called me.
There's a book that she wrote called Lafayette in the Somewhat United States, mm-hmm. where like Nick Offerman reads all the nice. Washington quotes. Ugh. And like, I think it's Andy, no, who, but in it, John Slattery does a bunch of them, and like John Hodgman reads in them. And so like every so often she'll be reading and just be like, and Roosevelt said, and then you hear like the voice of like John Slattery. It's really, really
That's
cool.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. Well, listen, I don't have, I love that a lot. And I think this is the first time anybody's plugged anything that is, literally an advertisement for somebody else's work, and it works really well. So I think we're going to make that a recurring segment because you did so well at that.
And
so
I'm trying to remember plug. There's a show on Max Fun called International Waters where like they ask you to both plug yourself and then to like karmically balance it out by like plugging somebody else.
I love that. So we're going to make that a recurring segment, which means that we'll do it once and maybe never again. Because our podcast is very immune to recurring segments. I will plug myself. I'm Alice Wetterlin. I'm great. And I'm reading So You Want to Talk About Race by Gemma Olo. And I'm not reading it. I'm listening to the audiobook version read by, this is really small written here, Bonnie Turpin. And it is... It's great. Like, I knew it was going to be good when I went into it. I knew that this book was going to be important. And everybody was talking about it and how great it was. But it is exceeded my expectations. Gemma Lowe's writing is awesome already. She's really funny. And
she is
really,
also very nice. I met her in New York not too long ago. And she is super fun.
My heart breaks. I love her. But the book is written so comprehensively. And it really is like a kind, patient primer on how to be like a good human being in today's society, in which we're trying to be more aware of other people's experiences. And I appreciate, you can tell how much patience somebody has to have to write something like this and from their experience. And it's just like, it's just so well done, and it's so interesting, and also, you know, heartbreaking in parts, but like a really wonderful read. So I really recommend it to white people.
Just real quick, just to really weirdly juxtapose that. Right now we're looking at the shot of this is one of my favorite weird moments in this whole episode, where they're looking at like where the dilithium crystals are and stuff. And Wes,
it's 17 minutes in.
Wes leans into it and rubs the side of it and says, the lining's still smooth. And I would, okay, wait.
It looks like a little...
Oh, wait, I want to hear him say it.
The lining's still smooth.
I want Jordy to lean back in and be like,
we
what?
We should be able to do something with these dilithium fragments we scattered.
But it's such, sure, I really do like the cinematography of the shot a lot. Because you're looking at it from inside the chamber out, which is really interesting. I just love Wes's line of like, the lining's still smooth. It's so like, is that important? Oh, wait, hold on. Is that important?
Attempt the routing bypass.
I love whenever there's an idea introduced that I've never heard before in the show.
It doesn't matter.
The lining needs to be smooth for it to work.
Where am I going
is that
to get
a thing?
Cable?
Now Worf's talking to the extra who got.
Anywhere.
Eat this. Eat these noodles.
All right. Travis.
Yes.
It has been a pleasure.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you for being here. What?
I don't know. I was just waiting to see if you had like some kind of sign off phrase where you're like, come back next week, make it so.
I really don't.
Okay.
I did get distracted because my phone buzzed. You've been a fantastic guest.
Thank you.
You brought a lot of knowledge with you, which I really appreciate. And I'm going to check out Voyager even harder than I was already going to check it out because of what you said.
Really give it a shot.
I'm going to really give like it a hard shot.
Just like TNG, I think it takes like two seasons to
find
its feet.
Well, I have time.
Yeah.
I really do now because I'm so alone. Travis, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Come back next time.
Okay.
And make it so. I did it.
Yay.
Thank you for helping me.
You're welcome.
I needed you today.
Forever.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit foreverdogpodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.